Hello, welcome to the self-learning platform by Dr. Sushma Singh. Today we are going to start Unit 2, Approaches to Study Social Movements, Liberal, Gandhian and Marxism. Let us first have introduction about the unit. Facts do not speak for themselves. They have to be collected, arranged, categorized, and interpreted. One collects particular kind of facts and another observer collects different kinds of facts of the same event. Both give different meanings and arrive at different conclusions of the same event. There is no one way of looking social facts and processes. The same movements can be constructed and interpreted in many different ways, depending upon theoretical perspective from which one looks at the phenomena. Theoretical perspective or approach guides the selection of facts, their arrangement, classification, and interpretation. One gets better understanding of the process with more systematic and rigorous perspective than casual and unsystematic way of looking the phenomena. There are different approaches to study social movements, but at the same time, we should remember that empirical processes are not neat to fit into any one approach. Social and political processes are complex and have their own logic. Moreover, to approach in pure form, there are variations among the followers of the same theoretical perspective. There are different perspectives among the Marxists and also among the liberals. What is provided here is a broad framework as guide of a particular approach. Now let us discuss the Marxist approach. Scholars following the Marxist approach to arrange, analyze various social movements and those who are involved in social movements claiming to be Marxist are primarily interested in bringing about revolutionary change in society. According to the Marxist approach, conflict is the centering core of social movement. There are different kinds of conflict in society. Some conflicts are between individuals for personal power, style of functioning, between the communities, social, ethnic, and religious, regional, etc. And other conflicts are around material interest and domination of one over the others. The nature of the non-class conflict varies from society to society and can be resolved through negotiations and institutional mechanism. Sometimes, though not always, such conflict is in a grab of class or economic conflict. That is economic conflict of different classes belonging to separate communities take the form of ethnic conflict. Class conflict is located in economic structure of society, inbuilt in the production and distribution system. It is around domination and subjugation between the classes. Those who own means of production dominate social and political system. In all forms of class society, specific form of production predominates, which influences other forms of social relations. Ralph Milband observes, class domination can never be purely economic or purely cultural. It must always have a strong and pervasive political content, not least because the law is crystallized form which politics assumes in providing the necessary sanction and legitimation of all forms of domination. In this sense, politics sanctions what is permitted and therefore permits the relation between the members of different and conflicting classes inside and outside their relation of production. Those who own the control, the means of production, take away the surplus from those who produce. They accumulate surplus for their end and expand and perpetuate their control over the society. The former may be feudal lord in feudal system or industrial bourgeois in capitalist system. Antagonistic interest between the purported and labor classes are inherent in a class-based society that generates contradictions. The former use the coercive as well as the persuasive power of the state, and also other institutions include religion, culture, education, mass media, etc., to perpetuate their hegemony in society and to control the exploited classes. The latter resist, protest, and occasionally revolt or launch organized and collective action against the dominance of the perpetuated classes. It is their effort to bring about revolutionary political change by overthrowing the dominant class in power. In short, class struggle is the central driving force for resistance. Such collective action takes the form of social movements. Though to Marxist, structural causes of conflicting economic interest are central number of Marxist scholars have begun to pay attention to ethnic, religious, and other cultural factors. Some of them have begun to analyze the nature of the consciousness of exploited classes. According to Marxist scholars, numbers of the same class not only have common interest vis-a-vis other classes, but also share a common conscious regarding their position in society, that they share common interest. This facilitates the collective action against the ruling classes and state. They assert that the parliamentary democracy in capitalist state protects the interest of the haves and facilitates exploitation of the labor. Hence, the conflict between the haves and have-nots cannot be resolved through institutional mechanism. A.R. Desai argues in the 1960s that civil and democratic rights of the unprivileged were increasingly violated in capitalist system. The state failed to provide basic human rights of the vast majority of the exploited classes. The have-nots in rural areas were deprived of their livelihood, natural resources of land, forest, and water. People resist against anti-people measures of the state and dominant classes. Through various organized and unorganized struggles, the poor demand for the protection of their basic rights. He asserted the parliament form of government as a political institutional device has proved to be inadequate to continue or expand concrete democratic right of people. This form either operates as a shell within which the authority of capital perpetuates itself, obstructing or reducing the opportunities for people to consciously participate in the process of society, or is increasingly transforming itself into a dictatorship, where capital sheds some of its democratic pretensions and rules by open, ruthless, dictatorial means. People protest will continue till the people have ended the rule of capital in those countries where it still persists. They have also continued against those bureaucratic totalitarian political regimes where the rule of capital has ended, but where, due to certain peculiar historical circumstances, Stalinist, bureaucratic, terrorist political regimes have emerged. The movements and the protest of people will continue till adequate political institutional forms for the realization and exercise of concrete democratic rights are found. For Marxist, social movements are just not a protest and expression of the grievances. The exploited classes are not interested in reforming this or that institutions, though they do fight for incremental rights to strengthen their strength. For instance, working class fights for more wages, regulation of work, social security, and also participation in management. Through this, they build up solidarity among the workers and expand their struggles. Ultimately, their attempt is to crack the dominant political system so that in the process, the struggles move in the direction of revolutionary changes in the ownership of means of production and overthrow the dominant state structure. The struggles of the oppressed are both violent and non-violent, depending upon the strength and means adopted by the state and proprietary class for the oppression. They are not averse to violent path, but it does not mean that they always follow the violent means. For them, the means is not that important as the ends. They often highlight the violence and oppression of the state and the dominant classes against the exploited classes. In such a situation, the latter are left with no choice to counter the adversities with the same method. There is a good deal of debate among Marxist scholars on theoretical and methodological issues. Recently, a group of Marxist historians, the Subaltern Study Groups, had begun to study history from below. They criticize the traditional Marxist historians for ignoring the history of the masses, as if the subaltern classes do not make history of their own, depending solely on the advanced classes or the elite for organization and guidance. It is argued that the traditional Marxist scholars have undermined cultural factors and viewed a linear development of class consciousness. On the other hand, the subaltern studies historians are strongly criticized by other Marxist scholars for ignoring structural factors and viewing consciousness as dependent of structural contradictions. They are accused of being Hegelian idealists. Here we want to wind up today's lecture. Thank you so much for your attention.